Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
Lethal simplicity. Yeah, I like to score fast. It's hard not to be a Noles fan. Get Florida State back. I want a damn good defense. We're still undefeated. Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. Once again, this is Jason Staples, your host, and this show is brought to you by Luis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida. Luis, as always, is not just a realtor, but is trained as a professional videographer and photographer and will make your house look better than any other house on the market. Make sure that you look great on the internet for prospective home buyers, including smooth professional walkthrough video. If you're in the Jacksonville area and thinking about listing your house, give him a call or email him. Let him know that you heard about him through this podcast, and he'll throw in some extras. So also, if you're in the market to buy something in the real estate market in Jacksonville or the greater Jacksonville area, let him know, and nobody's going to outwork Lewis. So yeah, let's go ahead and get to the show. Lots of stuff to talk about today. I'm not going to spend too much time on the Independence Bowl. Really didn't show us a whole lot. It's basically what we expected. And Florida State was physically dominant in the game and, you know, outclassed an inferior opponent. They didn't play very many opponents that were that physically inferior on the year, played about three or four of them, and basically outclassed all of them when they played them. And so that's that. Also, we're healthier. I think you could see that by and large. And some of the bad actors on the team didn't play or weren't there for bowl preparation, which also really helped in terms of getting some of those things, getting some of the cultural stuff taken care of and making sure that everybody played as a team and so on. One thing I do think is worth noting is how much better James Blackmon looked after 15 bowl practices, how much more in control and comfortable he looked with what he was being asked to do. I did see a lot of people on social media suggesting that this was a play calling difference, or, you know, oh, you know, he's clearly, it's about, you know, him not feeling like he's going to get screamed at every time he comes to the sideline, so he feels more comfortable. Sorry, folks, that's just not it. This is why all along I was saying that it was so important that Florida State did make a bowl. And it was why I was saying to those who were saying, well, you know, it'd be better not to make a bowl so they could just go ahead and get to hiring coaches and recruiting and so on. No, those 15 bowl practices are really important. It's really, really important, because what you can do in terms of those bowl preparation practices is you can focus on working on the craft of things that you, in ways that you can't during the regular season, except in a bye. And Florida State really didn't have a bye this year that they could use as a bye because of the way that the hurricane situation happened. Basically, initially they did basically a full week of prep for ULM, and then that game got canceled, and then they thought they were going to be playing Miami, so they started Miami prep, and then that game got postponed, and then they got the NC State game. So they basically went through pretty much normal, almost normal practice weeks, but actually diminished in terms of what they were able to do because they missed a day or two in there. But they went through almost normal practice weeks in terms of what they were able to work on. So they weren't able to work on a lot of those fundamentals and some of the craft things that you want to be able to do with, especially with a true freshman who is just learning the position, you know, getting him comfortable. So, and once you get to game week prep, it's just a race to make sure that you get the things installed that you need to get installed, that the guy understands what defenses he's going to face and all that. It's just, there's not time to really work on all that stuff. 15 bowl practices, you get a chance to actually work and get a kid comfortable. It makes a big difference. And then, of course, playing an inferior team, having plenty of time to throw, you know, all of that stuff, being dominant up front where you're able to run the football at will. Yeah, that stuff helps too. But yeah, that's primarily where you saw some differences. And I think you saw where Blackmon should fit very well in Willie Taggart's offense in terms of, you know, the stuff that he does well, his vertical stuff down the field, you know, stretching defenses with that big arm. And you know, throwing those bucket throws, fades, things like that, really pushing the ball down the field is really where he's at his best, and that's the play action shot stuff is really where you're going to see a lot of emphasis in Taggart's offense. So you could see where he's gonna be able to potentially excel in what Taggart's going to be doing. Now I will say, you know, the coming to the sideline and getting screamed at, you know, a lot of people suggested that makes a difference. Again, people are forgetting how well Florida State quarterbacks have played over the years, and forgetting that, Fisher is one of the best quarterback coaches in the country, apparently. But, I don't know how people forget that so quickly, but one thing I will say is that the screaming thing, while it probably had next to zero, if any, impact on Blackman's performance here, it did affect recruiting, and it did have a negative impact on EJ Manuel years ago. So, but like I said, it did impact recruiting and which quarterbacks were really willing to play for Fisher. So that part does matter. But in terms of this performance, really not. Like I said, you could see how much more comfortable he was, able to make those much more comfortable checking the ball down, throwing to the backs out of the backfield, and just taking the free stuff. And, you know, if you can do that, that makes your life a lot easier on the quarterback. And he was able to see those things and process them much more quickly, which led to a lot more success on the offensive side. Again, along with just being physically superior, which doesn't hurt. Now, one difference that did show up actually during the bowl preparation and during the week was the return of some discipline to the program. And I've been very clear over the last few years that there were a lot of people who suggested that Fisher was too hard on the players and was too focused on discipline all the time and so on, and that was the real problem, that you got to let the players have fun, and you know, this constant focus on discipline and putting the screws to them all the time was the real problem. Well, actually, if anything, the problem was the opposite, that there was insufficient discipline. And actually, I learned some things this week that I actually hadn't known in terms of some of the past. I'm not going to dredge that up at the moment, but in terms of the importance of we've talked about on this program the importance of Monk Bonassort to Florida State and how important he was as a conciliary for Jimbo Fisher, and how big of a loss his loss for the Florida State community was. But I found out some more stuff this week that was even bigger in terms of the impact that Monk Bonassort had on discipline on the team and on making sure that players were accountable to the rules and so on. And once he got sick, the change there in terms of accountability within the program of particularly of players really, really radically changed. And so just want to once again emphasize how important Monk Bonassort was to that whole aspect. And when he got sick, a lot of things changed in the program in that regard. And you could see it. You could see the impact on culture, the impact on players basically feeling like they could do what they wanted to do and get away with it. And generally speaking, they were allowed to get away with it. And I talked about on previous podcasts, you know, some time ago as well, that there were times where Jimbo Fisher had overruled his assistant coaches who had wanted to bench players or had wanted to suspend players in certain cases for things that really deserved benching or suspension, and Fisher overruled, and ultimately that's the sort of thing that can lead to a lack of accountability among players. Players don't listen to their position coaches, and then you wind up with trouble. Well, a few of the potential bad actors didn't play in this game, and then also you saw a couple of disciplinary situations among some of the younger guys as well that are projected to be back next year in this game as well, where they went through with the kind of discipline that was necessary. So, for example, I know I've gotten some questions, one on Facebook, probably the first one that I got about this from Nicholas Sicoccio, I believe. I think that's how you say that name. Sorry if I butchered that. But any truth to LeBourne transferring? I was told he's in Virginia at home and not at the bowl game despite being a redshirt. Well, yes, LeBourne had been, there had been some rumblings that LeBourne was unhappy and was talking about potentially transferring during the year. That changed when Taggart took over, because he, if anybody is going to be the biggest, is in line to potentially be one of the two or three biggest beneficiaries of that change in terms of what Taggart's offense brings to the table and how it can feature a guy with LeBourne's particular set of skills. But so there was some truth to that then. I don't expect him to transfer now. Yes, he was in Virginia at home. He was sent home for disciplinary reasons. He missed some meetings. I think there was a curfew violation in there as well. And basically, Odell Higgins did what needed to be done. And that was with support of LeBourne's mom, by the way. Basically, this is not a situation where he was sent home and, you know, that this could potentially be an issue in terms of LeBourne's, the people in LeBourne's ear, support staff or whatever. This was one of those situations where his mom is going to, you know, wants to take care of some business as well. And that's a good thing. So I have to say, Odell Higgins, good on you, man. Once again, Odell showing why he is so beloved and why he deserves every penny that Florida State's ever paid the guy. Odell once again handling this the way that it needed to be handled as an interim coach, not only but as you know as someone looking forward to next year and making sure that the culture and the program is already starting to change in that regard. Beyond that, you also had Nooney Murray out with a with a concussion. sat out the game and didn't play, was in street clothes because of that concussion. Another situation where you could, you know, the potential a little bit of addition by subtraction on the field, and you have to say 29 played pretty dang well in that spot. Nooney was one of those guys for sure that there'd been some overrules on, and yeah, well, you know, very. It's just you have to say, you know, sometimes those concussions can really get you. Anyway, I should mention that that the disciplinary stuff that happened during bowl preparation, these were Odell Higgins' decisions and prior staff decisions. These were not Willie Taggart's domain. Taggart let that staff do their thing, let them coach. Though again, Odell is going to be on the staff next year. He and Taggart have already been working together, and Taggart has made it very clear that discipline is going to be an emphasis. So, you know, again, it's not something that Taggart was dealing with specifically, but Odell was handling, knowing where Taggart's going to go with this. And quite frankly, there's going to be a rude awakening coming for some players in January, February, and spring practice. There's a serious disconnect between what I think some of them expect and what's really going to happen. There are a lot of people and players who are looking at Willie Taggart and the Taggart era as primarily bringing the fun back to football. They're expecting that, you know, Taggart's going to make football fun again. And they're going to, you know, music, and it's going to be looser and all that. And yeah, there may be some more accommodations in some of those areas, whether it be music or elsewhere. But I'm telling you, Willie Taggart's about to go Junction Boys on this bunch come January, February, and spring practice. Now, they won't grind them up physically in, you know, goal line drill after goal line drill, short yardage after short yardage, you know, days on end in spring practice like Jimbo did last year. I did already hear from one source that they want to make sure that they emphasize not taking the Alabama approach of just grinding your players up so that, you know, you end up banged up too much, too often. So that's something that Taggart and his staff are aware of. But they're about to go Junction Boys in terms of bringing back a mat drill style mental approach. That's something that I think this group, I mean, you've heard me talk on this program the last few years about how soft I thought this group was mentally and how, and also physically in some regards, but really it was the mental thing. They didn't come out and just out hit teams. They didn't come out with that chip on their shoulder with the mentality that I was used to from a Florida State team. the identity of a Florida State Seminoles football team, of what it means to be that. And that's going to take grinding a little bit, and that's going to take that Matt Drill style approach during the off season, and you're going to see that these guys are going to learn how to work really quickly. And I'm telling you, this is something that came up in Deion Sanders' quotes and Taggart's comments in his interview, and Odell Hagen's comments. There's all of those those quotes. They shared a common message, and you can hear all of those guys are in harmony. They're all talking. They all know where they want to go. They all know what the problems are in this regard. And what did you hear from Deion Sanders when he was asked, what's Florida State's identity? Oh, being a Seminole is all about hard work. Hard work, hard work, knowledge of the game, putting all that work in, and then things get fun. Too many guys try to put fun before hard work, and that it just doesn't work that way. Yeah. Taggart wants to make football fun again, but football's fun when you're winning. And you know how you win? You work. Hard work. Learning that you can, the lesson of Matt Drills, and I went through Matt Drills more than once, and the lesson of Matt Drills is that you can push your body further than you think you can. It's a mind over matter kind of thing that you learn, that lesson, and that makes a difference. And I think really one of the ways to think about this is drawing a distinction between swag, which everybody wants to talk about. Oh, he's going to bring the swag back. He's going to bring the swag back. Florida State's going to have swag again. He's going to be swaggering around. If you listen to Deion, that's not what you heard. You didn't hear, he's going to bring the swag back to Florida State. You know what you heard? He's bringing the hard work back to Florida State. That's the difference. And so what it is it's the difference between swag and pride. And that's something that I think a lot of young players in particular, but a lot of people mix up. People see the woofing, people see the posturing, the chip on the shoulder, and they go, oh, that's swag. Yeah, but you can have that and be a fake tough guy. You can be the cornerback who gets beat, and then the quarterback misses the throw, and then the cornerback is in the receiver's ear the whole time, woofing on the way back. Yeah, 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 yeah. You can't beat me. Dude, I had you by four steps. Not my fault the quarterback underthrew me or overthrew me or whatever, right? The one, that's swag. That's not having the pride there. But what Florida State always had in the past, and this was something that when I got there in 2000, this is one of those things that I got exposed to right away. I could see that difference. And that was that difference was taking pride in never being outworked. Nobody's going to outwork us. Nobody's doing the stuff that we're doing. Nobody's going to be better prepared than us. When we get out there, we deserve to win. You shouldn't even be on the same field as me because you haven't done the work I did. That's the mentality. That's pride. Now, it's easy to mix that up with swag. But those guys, especially in the, that 2000 team, those guys worked their tail off. I worked with them. And you look at the pride that goes out there of, man, you didn't go through mat drills like we did. You didn't go through the hell that we were put through to try to be great, to become a champion. You didn't go through that, so you don't deserve to beat me. And there's kind of a sense of you don't belong in the same field as me that comes when you know you deserve to win because you outwork the guy across from you. And yeah, that's when things get fun. But see, I get the sense that with a lot of these guys, with this team in particular, this 2016 team, there wasn't that sense of, man, we outworked everybody, and so we're just getting what's coming to us. We're getting what we deserve in terms of preparation, that taking pride in that. And that, I think, is going to be the thing that is going to be the big emphasis early on in Willie Taggart's tenure, these first few months. You're going to see that accountability and trying to build back that culture of basically building in the sense that that you've worked enough, you've outworked anybody that you're going to play against. You've done such that whoever's out there with you doesn't deserve to beat you. So when it comes down to crunch time, you believe ball don't lie and ball's going to favor me because I did stuff you didn't do. That's pride. And that's the thing. And actually, I think that's what Mark Richt brought to Miami. You look at Miami going through mats, doing the stuff that was all part of the recipe for Florida State success. And those guys, you watch them on the field this year, they believed that they had done the work. They believed that they deserved to win. And they outplayed where they should have been. That team was not as good as their outcome. That's what I think you're going to see. And like I said, there's going to be a rude awakening coming for some of these players who haven't done that to the same extent. And again, there's a difference here between accountability and discipline and getting screamed at. And this is where, again, getting that screaming thing coming back in. You hear people talking about, being hard on guys. It's one thing to hear somebody constantly yell at you or, even call out you personally or whatever. That's not discipline. That's not accountability. That after a while, it's just Charlie Brown's teachers, wah, 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 wah. I just hear you yelling, but I don't really care. I'm just blocking you out. What matters is if you don't do what you're supposed to do, somebody else is going to do it. And somebody else is going to take your job. If you don't do what you're supposed to do, then you're going to be standing next to me. That's accountability. That's discipline. Or if you really do what you're not supposed to do, you're not going to be on this team. You're not going to be in position to play. That's accountability. So I think that's what you're going to see. That's going to be one of the big emphases early on, is trying to bring the pride back in the program, but to do so specifically by emphasizing that old finish the drill mentality. I mean, that was a mantra when I was part of those teams. Finish the drill. Finish the drill. That stuff is going to be where I think the focus is going to be. Now, a few other things. As far as the defensive coordinator search, I continue all my intelligence, all the intel that I keep getting from my sources continues to say the same things. I should note, by the way, that when I mentioned Bob Diaco, this was several podcasts ago, that was actually a mistake from my source. I didn't know that until this week. My source had meant Leonard, but had said the Nebraska coach, mixing up Nebraska and Wisconsin, the Nebraska defensive coordinator instead of the Wisconsin defensive coordinator. That explains why Diaco was mentioned then, and why suddenly the next time it was like, well, it doesn't seem like, hearing from my sources, Diaco is actually involved and must have moved on from him. No, it was actually Leonard all along, and I hadn't. Anyway, that happens. Sometimes wires get crossed, but I still, as of right now, and again, going back to the last podcast, I was very clear that Leonard is the Leonard was then, and I still think is the primary focus of the defensive coordinator search. I do expect that the defensive coordinator will be known on Sunday, then announced Monday or Tuesday. So be known by about New Year's, and then announced, say, January 2nd or January 3rd. There's been some head faking going on behind the scenes, as far as I can tell. I think right now, because of the situation where Florida State's next defensive coordinator is coaching in a bowl game, they're trying not to stir up those waters too much, and they're trying to make sure that they can let the guy finish what he's doing now before moving on. And actually, the decision really finally needs to be made after the game, when you get the time to sit down and go through and make the final decision with your family as a coach. But my impression is that there's been a little bit of misinformation behind the scenes on this, and that there's been some head faking from Taggart and his group, from those around him, going on with some of this. But like I said, the best intel that I've got is that Florida State's defensive coordinator is coaching in the Orange Bowl, and that we can basically expect an announcement shortly after the Orange, basically the day after, 2 days after the Orange Bowl, we'll have a good sense. We'll know who's going to be Florida State's defensive coordinator, because it's going to be somebody who is coaching in that game, and then basically Florida State can move on once that's announced. I continue to hear that the offensive line run game coordinator hire is going to be Greg Fry, and once again, I want to emphasize how good of a hire that is. I expect the offensive line to be the improvement to be noticeable in year one. The bodies are there. The talent is there. There's no lack of talent in terms of the offensive line. They definitely need to go through a very tough offseason to build, you know, to build up their bodies, to recompose a little bit and get stronger. But Once they get in this system, and I've been watching a lot of film of what they do in the run game, you add a good technical coach like Fry, and wow, good chance that he's going to be that they're going to be able to run the football on just about anybody next year with the backs they have, and then with what they're going to do up front. Like I said before, spread ties, having coached under Wilson at Indiana, under Rich Rod. And then also the Harbaugh ties, which tie into all the other stuff that Taggart likes to do up front. So great fit. I still expect Ron Dugans to be the wide receiver coach at Florida State after the Orange Bowl. So again, that has not changed. As for the Deion Sanders rumors, you know, the question of Deion Sanders being the defensive backs coach and all this, I've been told it's not happening. That my source, my best source on this, who's pretty good source, very close to all this, has said, no, Deion's not going to be an assistant coach, but that Deion will have some role that I'm still a bit unclear on what that would entail, but would have some role that would play into recruiting or something like that. I don't actually know what's going to happen there. But like I said, I've been told that Deion won't be one of the assistant coaches. I don't know why we would expect him to give up his $2 million a year salary for basically doing much less for the NFL Network to make peanuts as an assistant coach. Much more likely, again, that you'd see him, just thinking about it, that you'd see him take some other role that would be additive, that would allow him to do some things that otherwise, you know, he couldn't do. But he'll be around the program a lot more, and he'll be able to help. But like I said, I've been told he's not going to be one of the actual staffers, just in case that continued to be a question. So that still leaves, as of right now, still leaves three coaches to be decided, and then another coach once January 10th rolls around, another coach can be added to there. So there will be four more coaching hires. Don't really know who those guys are going to be. This is, of course, factoring in Fry and Dugans as hires. Not sure who those coaches are going to be. Like I said, the defensive coordinator, I think, is coaching in the Orange Bowl and will be announced shortly after that. And then there will be three more hires beyond that, and exactly who they'll be, I'm not sure, and my best source has not been forthcoming, or hasn't really made it known on who those would be as well. So the focus has been on making sure that offensive line, wide receiver, and defensive coordinator were taken care of first. So, okay, well, either way, I think that the staff in general will basically be wrapped up by the time the dead period ends January 11th. You'll see a full staff of 10, I think, by then. All right, let's go ahead and do some mailbag to finish the show. Got a few minutes here to before I want to wrap this. I'm going to do a larger mailbag episode next, but I do want to address a few of these things that tie into some of the stuff that was discussed today. First question from Thaddeus Boston. I've read on a few message boards on other sites about the possibility of Bo Pelini being the target for the defensive coordinator position. What are your thoughts on him being a possible candidate? I don't buy that he is a candidate. His name has not come up with any of my sources. Aside from there being some speculation that he's a good defensive coordinator who, you know, has a reputation, I think this is just people throwing stuff at the wall. I don't think he is a candidate. And I don't think, especially, that his style of just being a screamer will fit on what Taggart really wants to build in his staff. So I don't see him being a fit at all, and I don't think he is a candidate. All right, next question from Melissa White. Recent convert to the podcast and enjoy it very much. Thank you. Two questions. One, it seems to me that Taggart has a clear idea for who his coaches will be already, with maybe one or two exceptions. I think one position where he's a little less set is offensive coordinator, quarterback coach. What are some names you've heard about? That's number one. Okay, I'll answer that first before I get to the second question. Everything I've been told is that Taggart is planning on being his own offensive coordinator and quarterback coach. So I don't think that it's a matter of that being a little less set. I think it is set, and that he plans on being that. At least that's everything that I've heard. And I have a hard time thinking that he wouldn't have someone else to help him working with the quarterback coach some when the head coach's attention needs to be elsewhere. So I don't know if, you know, maybe when you have a special teams hire or something like that, that guy sort of assists with quarterbacks or something during the other portion of practice, the other 80% of practice. I don't know exactly how they're going to do that, but he's going to be the offensive coordinator effectively. At least that's the plan. And also he's going to be the primary guy working with quarterbacks. So I don't know exactly how that's going to work in terms of where he's going to get any help when his attention has to be elsewhere. But by and large, he's going to be with the quarterbacks during practice. Number two question from Melissa White. He seems more focused on recruiting the West Coast than the previous staff and has Florida well covered. Do you think geographic regional connections is a factor in his personnel decisions? If so, are there names with connections with Texas, Georgia, and California? Yes and no. I think the main thing is he wants to get the best possible coaches and guys with the personality to be great recruiters. And then basically they'll be assigned geographical and regional places to recruit based on their backgrounds, more than he's going to hire guys who have geographical regional connections specifically for those geographical regional connections. The guys that he would have done that for are already on the roster with Woody and Lockett, in terms of locking down Tampa and South Florida, and Pimpleton and Central Florida. I mean, those guys all have those areas that, you know, they matter. And of course, Pimpleton can handle that Kentucky, Tennessee area as well, being from Kentucky. So, you know, there's some connections there. I think there'll be some geographical variation, but I think ultimately his priority is to get great coaches and guys with personality to be recruiters, and then just assign them as best need be, rather than just saying, oh, well, hey, you're from Georgia, let's go ahead and hire you. Or you're from California, you know, we want to have a foothold there. I don't think that's that so much. Now, as far as focusing on recruiting the West Coast, you got to remember he and that staff, many of the guys that were coming over, he and David Kelly in particular, David Kelly being the director of personnel out at Oregon under Taggart, who he had brought with him from South Florida. Those guys had spent a lot of time working in California for Oregon, because that's where Oregon has to spend most of its time recruiting. So they built relationships there, and they're going to go ahead and try to pull as many of those relationships in the direction of Florida State now that they're there. You don't just abandon, you know, say, well, you know, we had that kid almost, you know, committed to Oregon, and now we're going to Florida State and we're just not going to call. No, you go ahead and you marshal that relationship as best as possible to see if maybe you can pull that kid all the way from the West Coast to Tallahassee. So this cycle, maybe there's probably going to be a little more attention in California than there would be any other cycle, because of the fact that they've been on the West Coast with that job. Now, once you get a few kids from California and they start to ball out, then you may build a little bit more of a pipeline, a chance for another few guys to follow those guys. So, you know, we'll see how that goes as well. So, all right, next question. This is from Reggie. Haven't reached out to you since the days on Noel Digest a few years back. Yeah, it's been a while. Love your podcast. I've tried to share it with some of my friends who are FSU alums and follow our football team. Thank you. All right, I'm going to go ahead and skip forward. Okay, I had a question around the transition that Jimbo has moved on. For one, I'm very sad to see him go. I'm wondering mostly around the daily operations of the team and what is Willie Taggart's philosophy on strength and conditioning. I know we lost our director of operations who won an award, and we're not retaining our strength coach. I hope that we stick with the Hatch system, as it's been successful for us and many other teams, LSU, Bama, etc. Now, I've been told that Taggart is going to be bringing in the the three primary strength and conditioning guys that he had, that he brought with him from USF to Oregon. That is Irele Odorinde as the head strength and conditioning guy, Joey Carnes and Steven Gortmaker. Now, Gortmaker and Odorinde go all the way back to Western Kentucky under Jack Harbaugh. So they go back all the way to that time, like Taggart himself, and there's deep connections there. I don't actually know their philosophy in terms of how they basically have done their strength and conditioning, whether, you know, they follow the Hatch stuff and or whether they have, you know, some other preferred approaches, where they fall in on that. The primary thing is that they know what Taggart wants and that they've been successful in implementing that at prior stops. And also, you remember, Odorinde is the guy who got suspended for a month without pay when three guys ended up in the hospital at Oregon in one of the first workouts that they did, which should tell you once again what, you know, is in store for Florida State guys in, you know, the month of January, month of February. Now, that said, I know the workout that they were doing when those guys got rhabdomyolysis, and I could do that workout now and not wind up hurting much even tomorrow. So that just shows you how out of shape Oregon was and how poorly conditioned they were when they got out there. So I don't think it's going to be quite that bad for Florida State. But again, they're going to put the screws to guys. I know that. And that they're going to get them working hard. I still need to find out what their philosophical approach is and all that, because I honestly don't know. In terms of, you know, where they fall in terms of systems and how they've done that stuff. I'll be looking into that, and I'll see if I can find out once they're available a little bit more, once there's some people who've been able to get more of a sense on that, and I'll reach out and find that out as time goes by. All right, other question also from Reggie. What are your thoughts on Willie Taggart not hiring a quarterback coach? I'm excited about this new year and looking forward to new blood, but I think that may be a short-sighted decision. We all know that Jimbo didn't appreciate having another voice in the room while game planning and reviewing film. I hope the coaches on offense can bring this to the table and we have someone else in the box to help us react better to the ebb and flow of games. Well, the thing is, he is going to have, I mean, Fry is a guy that can walk right in and have a major impact in terms of a voice in the room with run game, all sorts of things. So that's really important. That's going to be another voice in the room that can help with that stuff. Same thing with Dugans. Dugans is definitely capable of doing that stuff. Same thing with Pimpleton and Telly Lockett has, you know, a strong background there. I mean, Pimpleton and Lockett have run their own offenses. Lockett has been a head coach. Pimpleton was an offensive coordinator. Fry has been a run game coordinator. Dugans has been a co-offensive coordinator. These are guys that are going to have a voice in the room. So, and they're all guys that can do whatever's necessary on the scheme side, especially within the confines of the Gulf Coast stuff that Taggart's wanting to do. So, you know, I think it's fine for him not hiring a quarterback coach, because he's going to be able to, again, the emphasis is going to be that the quarterback is an extension of him on the field. That's something Jimbo always wanted. That's something Taggart wants. And I suspect that he's going to have someone else helping him a little bit with that position as need be, but I don't really have a problem with that, because again, as the attention goes in practice, normally as a head coach or as an offensive coordinator, you're working through the quarterback anyway, so you don't necessarily have to have someone else there. And if he thinks that there's other potential gaps on the staff that he wants to fill with someone else putting their full-time attention somewhere else, then I see no problem with that. All right. This is the final one that I'm going to, I guess, I'll do two more for this podcast, and then I'll get to a full mailbag podcast for the next one. So if you've got any questions, now's the time to get them in. Send them to me via Facebook, Twitter. You can do it through comments on the Unconquered Podcast, on unconqueredpodcast.com. Any number of things you can do there and to get your questions in. But I'll do two more before I wrap it up. Number one is this from an anonymous person. When Coach Taggart does hire the new defensive coordinator, do you think he allows that defense coordinator to run his own system that he is used to and can easily teach the players, or will he be more like a micromanager, more like micromanager Jimbo, and want him to run a system that he would prefer? This is this is it's a little bit of a false dichotomy. I should mention, so basically Taggart is hiring a defensive coordinator to run the system that Taggart prefers. He's hiring a coordinator that runs a system that is along the lines of what Taggart wants to run. So he's specifically going out and interviewing people that have particular philosophical and schematic approaches that are things that Taggart believes in. So he's going to bring that guy in to do what he wants him to do. But then once he's brought that guy in to run the system that he actually brought him in to run, he's going to let him run that system. So let's say it's Jim Leonard. If Leonard comes in, you're going to see Florida State basically running a very similar system to what Dave Aranda runs at LSU and ran at Wisconsin before Leonard. You're going to see that kind of approach. Taggart's going to have say, like any head coach, on, no, I'd prefer you not do that. But he's specifically going out and hiring guys that fit his philosophy, fit what he wants, so that he doesn't have to micromanage him. That's the key. So it's a little bit of both, but and a little bit of neither. So yeah, I expect him to, you know, and again, from what I've been told, they want to run a flexible, both odd and even front, but primarily an odd front approach in terms of what personnel they're going to do. So more of a 3-4, 3-3 type approach up front, but go very flexible with that fourth potential front player being a guy that can put his hand down and rush the passer or drop off and do different things, having some flexibility in terms of how they do it. That's being multiple on defense and is a big emphasis for Taggart. And that's something that he's going to get and have a guy come in to do. And he also wants to be attacking and to press and to do all those things that he identifies as core to what it is to be a proper Florida State defense. Now, there've been some people out there who've said, well, you know, Florida State doesn't have the personnel to play 3-4. They've recruited for 3-4 for 5 years. Florida State's personnel is perfectly suited for 3-4. That's what they have on the roster. But they don't have enough depth at linebacker. That's because some of the guys that will be 3-4 outside linebackers are listed as defensive ends on Florida State's roster or as Buck, which is the 3-4 outside linebacker. So Florida State already has 3-4 personnel. It lines up perfectly for what Taggart wants to do with that 3-4, 3-3, 4-2-5 flexible approach. The personnel is basically perfect for what he wants to do. All right, final question. How well does Keith Gavin fit into the Taggart offense? Well, very well. Taggart wants to be able to get the ball in the hands of his playmakers on the edge quickly and let them become ball carriers. Gavin can do that for sure. And then secondly, he likes to challenge teams downfield with vertical stuff, and that's really where Gavin and especially Auden Tate could shine. You get these guys out split wide and then heading downfield on posts, fades, things like that. And I've been very clear for years that the one thing that I was always frustrated about with Jimbo is that he didn't use the back shoulder fade and some of those vertical routes nearly often enough. That's something we'll see a lot more of with Taggart. Those things really suit Gavin. They suit Tate. They suit George Campbell if he ever gets healthy. So some of these guys are going to be, especially some of those downfield, bigger wide receivers, they should fit really well in what Taggart wants to do. All right. Well, that's going to go ahead and do it for us here on the Unconquered podcast. I've got still a bunch more questions to get through. Definitely send more mailbag questions. I'll do a full mailbag episode next, but don't want to extend this one much longer. Once again, this podcast is brought to you by Luis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in the greater Jacksonville area. Make sure you go through Luis. If you ever have any real estate needs in Jacksonville, let him know you heard about him from the Unconquered podcast. Definitely helped me out a lot. Also, I should mention some new merchandise has just hit the Unconquered podcast shop, the store online. Take a look at some of the new shirts and such that have just landed. And now that my designer is no longer sick, He is going to be working on getting some more stuff up there very soon. So, and once again, if you've been enjoying this podcast, please rate and review on iTunes. 5-star ratings help a ton. Pushes this podcast up in the rankings and makes it more visible to all sorts of people, so that we get more listeners, which then helps me a ton as I'm able to do more episodes and so on. So once again, rate and review on iTunes and on whatever your podcast manager of choice is. Pass it along to friends. The more listeners we have, the better off everybody is, all the rest of the listeners, because it definitely helps me out as I'm doing more on the podcast front. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much, and have a great day if you want to.
I made this.